First Time for Everything, a Good Omens podfic, written by Entangled Now and read by Jub. Summary, in which Aziraphale and Crowley discuss the first time they made an effort. Crowley's slouch has been slowly increasing in severity over the last few hours. He'd gone from a comfortable sprawl to a physically impossible lounge, with one leg thrown over the arm of the sofa and the other half folded underneath him. He's not entirely sure how he's still managing to drink his wine. Possibly the unique snake-like qualities of his neck are coming in handy there. Even Aziraphale's usually perfect posture has developed a squishy looseness that the angel normally resists until they are both much closer to Hammered. But since they are doing more talking than drinking, neither of them are quite there yet. Crowley has, however, completely lost the thread of conversation while he was admiring Aziraphale's ability to be unfairly attractive while drunk in a cardigan. "What was I saying?" he asks, nose scrunched in thought, in a way that he suspects is much less appealing. "Sir Basil's tournament," Aziraphale says with a nod. He's very good at conversational nudges, though he does occasionally nudge Crowley in a direction he wasn't going in originally. The angel is unexpectedly crafty at times, especially when it comes to steering the topic of conversation. He does an astonishing amount of steering for someone who refuses to drive. "Right. That's right. That's where he was going. The tournament, which I would like to protest again that I had absolutely no hand in. I just thought the idea of it was funny, because it reminded me of... ugh." Crowley scowls and gestures with his wine. "What was his bloody name? That knight with the stupid pointy beard?" He gestures towards his own face, though that probably isn't helpful, since he doesn't currently have a beard. "Everyone was obsessed with him. Always smelled vaguely of mint and horses. Mind you, almost everyone smelled of horses then, didn't they? 12th century was very horsey in general. Everyone was either the owner of a horse, or a monk, or a horse? That last bit is definitely wrong, but it fits the flow of conversation somehow. Though that does bring up a complaint that he's probably a few hundred years too late in making, but he finds that it suddenly bothers him in a way he can't leave alone. Horses have never liked me. Never. Is it the way I smell, do you think? Do I smell bad to horses? Is Crowley somehow naturally horse-repelling? He's briefly tempted to ask Aziraphale if he smells bad in general, but he's afraid of the answer he'd get. He doesn't want an absent worry he's had over the years to finally be confirmed. He's not quite drunk enough for that. "You don't smell bad, Crowley," Aziraphale reassures him, as if his obvious paranoia was somehow visible on his face. Bless it, that's a disturbing thought. But his glasses are somewhere on the table, with the empty wine bottles and the corkscrew and Aziraphale's pocket watch and his phone. "I think they can just sense the demonic aura." Aziraphale waves his hand in front of him, which looks less like he's tracing out a demonic aura, and more like he's making a crudely sexual gesture in Crowley's direction. Which chance would be a fine thing. Odd fucking phrase, that. Still, Crowley can't resist the mock scandalized noise of amusement, until he realizes that the angel probably doesn't even know why he's doing it. Wouldn't make sense, though, would it? I mean, the ones from hell have those... crony raises his other hand to try and make a point, before realizing it has a wine glass in it and managing at the last minute not to splash wine all over his lap. All nostrils full of hellfire. Probably can't smell anything at all. Definitely nothing upstairs to write home about. Are they smaller now? I remember them being bigger. Things get smaller, don't they? I've always wondered what that was about. But yes, horsey man, stupid beard, weirdly popular with the masses. Sir Edwin, Aziraphale supplies, as if he's following Crowley's train of thought perfectly. It's unsettling sometimes how good he is at that, considering how much absolute meandering nonsense Crowley can spout when he's in his cups. Even the parts the angel wasn't there for, as if they've always orbited the same people, the same places. That's it, Edwin. Absolute bloody pillock. Crowley attempts to find a bottle that they haven't emptied already on the table and ends up disappointed. Aziraphale passes one over from the bottle hoard he seems to have made beside his armchair. The absolute villain. I've no idea how he managed to merit so much attention. It's not like he had any special talents. Didn't really do anything noteworthy either. Didn't even die in a noteworthy way. History books love that, don't they? People did seem to reach a consensus that he was very handsome, which most likely helped, Aziraphale points out. Crowley's mouth twists into something unimpressed while he thinks about Edwin, about his unappealingly bland but youthful face, lack of plague marks, and tendency to sometimes look heroic in doorways. Ugh, I guess he wasn't hideous to look at, all symmetrical and everything. Didn't smell like the rest of the 12th century. That helped a lot. But he was such a burg, a smug burg. A smug, self-righteous, superior fucking burg. Aziraphale actually looked surprised. Hadn't he noticed how unbearable he could be? He'd met the man after all. Really? I'm surprised you disliked him so strongly. I'll admit I did always wonder if you and he hadn't... Aziraphale stops, as if to find a polite way to phrase what he wants to say. Crowley doubts he is going to choose a vulgar way to his eternal disappointment. He thinks about offering his own imaginative alternative, just to weather the scandalized horror that will be Aziraphale's reaction. Because he knows the blustering noises and accusing eyes will be worth it.
Feel free to tell me if I'm prying, of course, but I'm aware that you were sexually active long before I was.
What phrase that? Sexually active, Crowley decides, especially hearing it out of Aziraphale's mouth. Aziraphale nods agreement.
It is.
Like, you're actively accomplishing sex throughout the day. Who could manage that?
Shrews, maybe? Don't they have sex all the time until they expire from the effort? Crowley read that somewhere.
Oh, find the time, quite frankly.
Sounds impatient, Aziraphale offers. And inconvenient.
It does, Crowley agrees. But no, Satan and all his princes, no, didn't sleep with him. Couldn't stand the man. Smarmy sense of superiority. Suspiciously fond of horses. Ugh, not in any way worth the effort. Didn't sleep with him. Crowley takes a drink of wine, while Aziraphale separates out the empties, so they don't form some sort of conversational wall between them. slept with the other one, though. The tall one, with the shoulders, and the laugh. Big bloody axe. Now, that was a good time.
Sir William, as he often says his name, with a lilting edge of affection, finding a half-full bottle and popping the cork out for a refill. Oh, I remember him. Terribly decent chap. Liked a good sing-song. Exceptionally tall for the era.
And perfectly proportional, Crowley mutters. Aziraphil eyes him over his rather too full glass. He seems to have forgotten to stop pouring.
You're being vulgar,
he accuses. I'm just saying he had enormous hands. The comment probably would have felt more innocent if Crowley wasn't doing a terrible job of holding a smile.
No, you weren't,
Aziraphil says, because he's not an idiot. Crowley laughs until he remembers abruptly that the perfectly proportional Sir William caught a pike through the throat 5 years later, which sort of puts a damper on his amusement.
Aziraphil's right. He'd been a good man. He'd just been a bit more fond of the odd drunken sing-song than he was of spending time in the training yard or using shields.
And what about you? He asks. Since the angel had raised the question, it seems like a conversational topic up for grabs. I wasn't the only one forced to put up with Sir Edwin's perfectly symmetrical company. Didn't fancy it yourself?
No. I wasn't yet. I mean, I hadn't tried it yet,
Aziraphil says, slowly and slightly awkwardly.
Not really the done thing for ages. Frowned upon to go around experimenting willy-nilly with humans after the whole business with the... well, you know. I suppose you'd been experimenting for a while by then, though. I know you were already, intimately familiar with the practice in Rome.
Yes, Aziraphil knows that very well, because he'd walked in on Crowley being intimately familiar with the practice at one of the Roman fertility celebrations. There was nothing like making eye contact with your beloved adversary while pinned between two Roman legionaries, both of whom were currently balls deep inside you. There'd been a very awkward conversation after that, with a lot of even more awkward silences, until the sheer awkwardness had forced them both to pretend it had never happened. Until now, apparently.
I'm not certain if that was where you, learned about it,
Aziraphil continues. The tone is dismissive, but his eyebrows are curious, as are the hands sliding round and round his glass. Crowley stretches an arm outwards and lays it across the cushions, sinking into a sprawl that he hopes is both casual and appealing. He's very drunk, so odds are not good. Angel, are you asking me how I lost my virginity?
How unexpectedly forward of him.
He can't resist a smile and something with his eyebrows. He hopes his eyebrows are conveying amusement, or perhaps teasing. They are very drunk eyebrows, so it's hard to be sure. Aziraphil pauses with his mouth open when he seems to realize that he was, in fact, asking that. He seems to be deciding whether it's improper to continue asking, before obviously deciding to hell with it, so to speak.
If you find the question intrusive,
Crowley offers a rude noise, Don't be stupid. It's fine. You can ask me whatever you like. He throws a leg back over the arm of the sofa, jacket falling off his shoulder as he settles back into the cushions. I give you carte blanche to be exceptionally vulgar and intrusive into my very personal business. Seriously, if not you, then who else? Aziraphale sighs, as if he thinks he's made a terrible choice, but feels compelled to live with the consequences.
Very well, then. Tell me about the first time you, made the effort, as it were.
Crowley lets his head knock against the cushions, shakes his drunken memory. Right, yes. So, obviously, I tried it as soon as I got a decent handle on the whole pretending to be human thing. I mean, it's a sin, isn't it? Demon. I was sort of duty-bound to have a go at them all as they cropped up. It's sort of expected, after all. You can't be blundering around, not knowing what it's all about, if you expect to tempt them. It was, early, bloody ages ago. Sometime during the whole first Greek thing, before that temple on the water came down. You know, the one with the colorful port, the island thingy. Part of it broke off and sank. He looked at Aziraphale, who usually has an answer for him when he finds his memory full of holes, and sure enough, the angel's nodding.
Achilles,
he provides, helpfully.
They made exquisite little dried fruitcakes there.
Crowley smiles at him, because of course Aziraphale remembers the food. Of course he does. Yes, well, the orgies were very popular there, too. Lots of gods that they thought might give them stuff in exchange for all the very worshipful fucking they were doing. They made it a whole thing, and so I thought, fuck it. Or fuck me, more accurately, I suppose. I was going to see what all the fuss was about. Aziraphale has shuffled himself into a slightly more attentive position, which amuses Crowley immensely. There's going to be no literary merit to this story, he can guarantee it. I think Agrios was his name. Or Agios? Araganos? Something like that. Aegon? I don't rightly remember. Doesn't matter anymore, I suppose. He was a soldier on hire as a guard for one of those big homes, not so standing around in shiny armor, sweating and not doing a lot. I had a thing, a hell thing, in the house, and he'd make conversation while I wasted time there. He'd said something, some joke about the olives, or maybe the oranges, and it made me laugh. There's so much about them that's a misery, but he was funny. I remember that he was funny. Crowley had always had a weakness for the humans that made him laugh. It was almost like they'd seen through the whole thing, just for a moment, looked right at him and known things they shouldn't, somehow. All the impossibilities of the world suddenly noticed and laughed at for the nonsense it was. He had a thing for me, but it wasn't just lust. He thought I was interesting. My company actually seemed to please him. Crowley hadn't been sure why at the time. He'd always been too narrow and too obvious to fit in very well, and he hadn't made any real attempt to change that yet. 3,000 years and change ago, he was still surly and biting and too clever for his own good. He didn't even mind the eyes, Crowley mutters absently, remembering it suddenly. He made up some fanciful past about my mother being a Gorgon. I still wonder if I was accidentally hissing through the whole thing, because it became a bit less fanciful after. Aziraphale's smile is strangely soft for that, as if Crowley had shared something that he hadn't expected, a new and interesting facet of him. His glass is listing where it sits, and a drop of wine has even made its way to his pale trousers, a brief, bright stain. Crowley will wager the mark will be gone the next time he checks. Anyway, he wasn't known for being a prude or anything like that, so I decided that he'd do well enough for a first attempt. I let him kiss me, let him get a hand under my thingy. What were those tunics called? The one with the ugly colors with holes in it. Crowley waves a hand at the angel, who always knows all the stupid little details that he doesn't care enough to remember. Aziraphale tells him with the right pronunciation and everything. Honestly, he has no idea how the angel remembers so much about everything. Angel brain, he supposes. Absorbent, huge, ability to contain multitudes, and all that. He's watching Crowley with a sort of careful attention, and maybe that's because they don't normally share things like that. Not personal things. But their relationship is closer and a bit messier since the end of the world failed to happen. They fill each other's space a little less stiffly. They're more relaxed with each other without the constant threat of their friendship being discovered. Aziraphale has even taken to visiting his flat, bringing him gifts, in a reversal of habit that Crowley honestly doesn't know what to do with most of the time. It's very new and very confusing, and yet he's more content than he's ever been. It's nice to see Aziraphale relax a bit, too, to watch him slowly lose that watchful, nervous, slightly hunted air that's trailed him at varying distances as long as Crowley can remember. Right, yes, one of those. Very black, very stylish, though that's not important. I let him get a hand on my dick, which I was using at the time, what with being mostly man-shaped, you know how they can be. It was a nice enough sensation that I let him take me inside and touch me some more, let him shove that stupid tunic up and take it off. All very sexy and interesting, though I was more than a bit out of my depth, if I'm being honest. I'd seen humans fucking often enough, but I didn't realize how different it would be when you turn all your own bits on, or when you can actually feel it all. Aziraphale nods absently.
It is a bit overwhelming if you're not prepared for it.
Yes, right, exactly. Messy and overwhelming and ridiculous. It was the first time I put everything into service, so to speak. I hadn't even thought to try it by myself first, so I was stupid with it. I barely had a handle on where the sensations were coming from, and he was touching me and encouraging me to touch him. He seemed enthusiastic for that part. It was like he'd sort of twigged that I didn't have a fucking clue what I was doing and was finding it sort of exciting. He told me I looked like a beautiful, angry swan. Aziraphale gives a surprised burst of laughter, which quickly turns into another, body shaking in his chair, before he waves apology and attempts to smother it. Shut up, Crowley mutters easily. Took it as a compliment at the time. Didn't get many of them. Anyway, I eventually ended up bent over an ugly couch in one of the anterooms with his cock up my ass. It was fine. He had manners enough not to shove it straight in. I got 2 fingers of oil and everything. He spread my buttocks in a way that was vaguely obscene and offered a few choice comments on the view that don't translate well and that I'm not going to repeat in ancient Greek. Thank you very much. He fucked me for a bit. It was uncomfortable, but also sort of messy and enjoyable. And he sucked me off after, which I remember enjoying more than the fucking. Very good of him, that was. It was practically a marriage proposal back then. Crowley drains his glass.
Anikos. Anikos had been his name.
Not a bad experience, I suppose. Didn't put me off the whole thing entirely. People have had far worse. Aziraphale sinks back into his armchair, seems startled to find he's still holding his wine, and abruptly drinks half of it. Crony jiggles a boot in his direction. Go on, then, he says pointedly.
Whatever do you mean?
Aziraphale sounds almost unbearably prim. Come on, Crony tells him, because it's only fair. Come on, you started it. Tell me how yours went.
We are very drunk,
Aziraphale says quietly, as if it's the beginning of a series of rubbish excuses. All Crowley can do is hope to head them off before they appear. Yes, and you're going to remain drunk and tell me how you lost your virginity. There's fair, Angel.
Such a silly concept.
Aziraphale sighs and tops up his glass, which isn't even half empty. Crowley agrees, and they've talked about that at length, but that isn't currently the subject. However, he surprises Crowley by conceding the point.
Fine, you nosy fiend. Was the late 19th century, if you must know.
So, practically yesterday, then. Crowley can't help but point that out, because for them, it might as well be.
I was a late bloomer, to be quiet. I was spending a lot of time at a certain gentleman's club.
Crowley gives him a significant look over his boots.
I was there for the company and the dancing,
Aziraphale protests, as if he'd heard the entirety of Crowley's thought and feels terribly judged, which is mostly on him since Crowley had not voiced a word of it. And the exquisite little French fancies, Crowley adds with a knowing smile. Because that one he can't help. Aziraphale looks like he is going to deny the accusation on principle, but eventually caves.
Fine, yes, they were amazingly delicious. For all the advances in fondant, I've never had the like since.
You are a very predictable angel. Very predictable. Aziraphale chooses not to dignify that with a response.
His name was Matthew Rutherford, and he was new to London. I was at a loss for companionship, since I'd recently been thoughtlessly and cruelly abandoned after a fight.
Crowley makes a rude noise. Aziraphale affects an air of total innocence.
And my dearest friend had decided to sleep for almost half a century, leaving me utterly alone.
Hey, no guilt-tripping during reminiscences. Crowley complains of his boots. I'll not have it.
You really only have yourself to blame,
Aziraphale says. Crowley doesn't think that's entirely fair. He did apologize for his angry nap, which she'd admitted later, might have been a bit too extended. He'd taken the angel refusing him outright, without allowing him to even explain, hard. He'd understood, of course, but that didn't mean he couldn't be angry about it. A bit later, he'd made it up to the angel by saving him and his books from Nazis. But he'd missed the humans inventing powered flight, and bicycles, and the gramophone, so he felt like he'd suffered enough. Of course, interest had to be indicated, by necessity, very subtly, since relations between men were still frowned upon. Frowned upon a lot of things, the Victorians. Lots of frowning. Couldn't move for all the frownings you've had directed at you. That's why they grew all those moustaches, to cover it up. Or maybe to give it more of a respectful air. High society frowning, which will judge you twice as hard for something they do behind closed doors.
Yes, well, to avoid an overabundance of frowning in our general direction, things were hinted, or suggested, rather than spoken aloud. I understand that I'm not always the most observant of beings, but I was aware almost immediately that Matthew had an intimate affection for me.
Not hard, Crowley tells him. Look at you. You're basically human candy floss.
I'm choosing to take that as a compliment, because the alternative is pouring this wine on your head, and I don't want to be wasteful.
Crowley smiles at him from the sofa and waits for him to continue.
Anyway, I'm getting rather ahead of myself. I was aware of what went on, of course. Maybe not the intimate details, but the general theme. It was hard not to be. But it was understood that I didn't... that I abstained from such activities. Not through any sort of censure, I hasten to explain, but through a lack of interest in physical affairs. One of them explained to the others, rather knowingly, that I was a true intellectual, though I was never quite sure if that was a description or a euphemism for something else.
True, either way, Crowley decides.
Yes, I suppose.
So, you were well known to be uninterested in the vigorous activities at your gentlemanly sex club. Xerophil gives him a look at the phrasing, but doesn't protest the truth of it, because he's not a blasted idiot, for the most part.
Yes, though it was assumed, of course, that my proclivities ran that way.
Of course, Crowley agrees.
Anyway, I had been drinking a very nice port when there was an altercation in one of the back rooms. A young man who did not want to leave with another, the man in question being most insistent about it.
How rude. Crowley can't imagine a Xerophil letting that go.
Yes, and you know how much I dislike rudeness.
I hope you made a point of dissuading such terrible behavior.
Such behavior shouldn't be tolerated,
Xerophil agrees.
Crowley smiles, because he does love the angel's streak of bastardry and the ease at which he wields it. Matthew introduced himself, and I invited him to sit with me. We shared a rather lovely lemon tart, unbelievably fresh and creamy.
The man or the tart?
Crowley has to ask. He has to.
Xerophil eyes him over his wine, but honestly, that was almost too easy.
The angel shouldn't even be surprised.
Both, Xerophil says flatly, and Crowley very narrowly avoids spilling his own drink all over the sofa and himself. He can't help the burst of laughter, because he supposes that he deserved that.
Stop interrupting. As I was saying, we shared dessert, and I found him excellent company. So I invited him to dine with me again the next week, and it became something of a standing appointment.
Aziraphale holds up his glass to be refilled when Crowley raises the bottle between them.
I wasn't blind, of course. I was aware that his interest in me wasn't entirely intellectual. There have been a few over the years who had taken a quiet and sometimes not so quiet interest in me. I've always been careful not to encourage it, though I will admit to allowing him a variety of small intimacies that I wouldn't normally have. And so it wasn't entirely surprising when, after a very late gathering and far too much strong sherry, he leaned in and kissed me. I was so very...
Aziraphale stops talking for a second, sighs quietly.
I let him kiss me, and I kissed him back. It was nicer than I was expecting, strangely close and intimate, quite unlike any kiss that I'd experienced before. Oh, you must remember some of the customs of greeting we've both gone through. The over-exuberant, boisterous presses of mouth given to all and sundry. Not to mention a few people who pressed their attentions a little too enthusiastically to be passed off as a greeting.
Crowley nods knowingly. Met a few. Bit a few. Aziraphale smiles, as if the idea appeals to him.
It was very pleasant, and I enjoyed it, but at the time I was insistent that no more would come of it.
Crowley makes a scoffing noise. You kissed him, Angel. You gave the poor boy an opening. Honestly, what was he supposed to do but try and warm his way inside it? Aziraphale makes a noise which Crowley knows in hindsight agrees with him completely.
My experience with intimate relationships was rather limited at the time.
Crowley would wager that it's still rather limited, but that seems impolite to voice.
But it had been a very long time since I'd held anyone, and the experience was a quiet pleasure.
So, the young Mr. Rutherford is now convinced that he has a chance. You absolute cat.
Really, this must be terribly boring to listen to,
Aziraphale protests. Crowley frowns. Boring? Are you kidding? This is the opposite of boring. I was asleep when this was all going on, and I'm dying to know what happens. My first time was just a quick shag over a couch in ancient Greece. This is all Victorian repression and burgeoning desire, social expectation. 6,000 years you waited.
You're making fun of me,
Aziraphale accuses. I am making fun of you a little bit, Crowley admits, but I also genuinely want to know what happened. It's not often I got to know new things about you. There's a moment of softness in Aziraphale's expression, of affection, that Crowley suspects he's going to find himself warmed by long after he leaves.
It's really not as exciting as you make it sound. A few months later, I was invited to join several acquaintances for a week at a house in the country, an old family home with an extensive library that I was given permission to spend time in. Matthew was there as well, and on the third night he slipped into my bed and touched me.
Aziraphale pauses, a hot flush making its way obviously up his face at the memory. He eventually clears his throat and continues in a slightly quieter voice.
He saw to most of the preparation. I suspect he realized how little experience I had, but he seemed to understand that I was willing to be coaxed. He did a marvelous job of it, because I remember being rather bewildered at how easily he managed to disrobe me. Before I knew it, I was on top of him, and I was fully erect, and then I was inside him.
Aziraphale stops and drains his entire glass, which was more than half full. Crowley waits for him to compose himself again.
I've had the opportunity to try out the equipment, so to speak, beforehand. I can't imagine how it might have gone if I'd been completely unprepared for the sensations.
You'd have probably made an idiot out of yourself like I did, Crowley offers. Yowling like a cat in heat while a Greek soldier fucked me from behind.
Crowley will accept that it's entirely his fault that Aziraphale spends a moment coughing liquid out of the wrong pipes. I'm sure that I was still embarrassingly new in many ways, but he was kind enough not to mention it.
Crowley's reassured to hear it.
Aziraphale deserves kind. It was, well, even forewarned, it was rather intense. I hadn't expected such an extreme reaction to someone else touching me.
Aziraphale pauses for a few seconds, as if he'd become lost in the memory as well.
Anyway, his attentions became rather persistent after that. I was reluctant to let it become a habit, since the whole thing felt disturbingly unfair to him. Humans are so brave, and the number of lies necessary to carry on such an affair was varying. Though I will confess to some weakness where the physical aspects of it were concerned.
Crowley makes a sound of agreement. So, how did you get rid of him in the end, young Mr. Rutherford? Crowley slips an air of teasing into his voice, steps down on any hint of jealousy to be found there, because Aziraphale deserves to be pursued, to be desired, to explore whatever pleasure he finds appealing. Aziraphale briefly peers into his empty glass, as if there might be help to be found there. He looks uncomfortable, and Crowley offers a sympathetic noise, suspecting this story will end with confessions of love and gentle letdowns, or possibly a scene of excruciating scandal that Aziraphale has to deal with using miracles. He slaps on the most supportive face he can. Aziraphale, you don't have to tell me.
I told him I was in love with someone else, Aziraphale says quietly.
Crowley's glass freezes halfway to his mouth, and something twists painfully inside him. Because physical pleasure is one thing, but love. Love is something entirely different. Thinking about Aziraphale's careful exploration of what it means to be touched and kissed and adored is a soft, hot, voyeuristic sort of thrill.
a hunger that squirms and writhes in him in a way that almost feels like pleasure. But thinking about Aziraphale being in love with someone else, it feels a lot like falling, and Crowley's not sure he could bear that again.
Were you?
He forces himself to ask. Yes, and I think I had been for quite some time, Aziraphale says, the words chosen carefully. He's not looking at Crowley anymore. I think I was desperately lonely, and I missed him terribly. Crowley sets his glass on the table, hard enough that wine slops over the side. He decides he definitely needs to be sober for this.
Aziraphale.
The angel chooses not to react to his interruption, the words, if anything, coming out faster and more intently than before. Our disagreement was my fault, and I regretted it terribly later. It was always so easy for things to be his fault, you see. But they rarely were. I took advantage of his good nature. Crowley makes a noise in his throat, something sharp and protesting, because he knows, of course he knows, that Aziraphale is talking about him. The words torn out of him like it hurts. Aziraphale still wouldn't look at him, offering up everything he has to say, as if he has no choice but to confess now. I never told him that I felt the same. But of course I did. How could I not? Only I left it far too late, and I fear I missed my chance. You can only keep someone waiting for so long, after all. Crowley doesn't wait to hear any more. He's already spilled off the sofa, made his way to Aziraphale's side, and taken his shaking glass from him.
Aziraphale,
he says again, sharper this time, forcing him to gasp his way to a stop.
Sober up, please.
Aziraphale gives a quiet sigh.
I find that I don't want to,
he tells him. The hand that had been holding his wine glass is now curled round his own knee.
Angel, I'd rather not kiss you drunk.
Aziraphale makes a complicated noise, blinks up at him with a stunned, hopeful expression. He exhales sharply.
Really? You're still... I had assumed, when you didn't say anything after Armageddon, that you'd stopped waiting for me to catch up.
Maybe I was working up to it, Crowley grumbles, a little insulted, if he's being honest, because how could Aziraphale have possibly thought he'd just give up on him? He thought the angel knew him better than that.
Saying nothing for 6,000 years, it's not exactly an easy habit to break, but if I'd known for a bloody second that you thought I'd given up on you.
I thought you no longer wanted me, that you no longer desired to change what we were to each other. I was trying to be content.
Crowley leans down, one hand on the arm of the chair, determined to crush all those unnecessary words before they break free. But it still takes one last step of bravery for him to actually sink low enough to kiss the angel. Aziraphale's mouth is as soft as he'd always imagined, and it gives, under his own, the faintest noise crushed into silence when Crowley gives in to 6,000 years of quiet yearning and finally makes the depth of his affection known.
Aziraphale kisses him back, his hands lifting to rest on his shirt, warmth soaking through the fabric as fingers curl and grab. Crowley could have held himself there for an infinite amount of time, just feeling Aziraphale's mouth under his own, the slow flare of his breathing, the soft, almost inaudible noises he makes. But then Aziraphale pushes against that soft pressure, opens for him, and Crowley falls entirely, finds his mouth all sharp wine flavor and sweetness and warmth. It's messy, neither of them really caring whether they're doing it well, just intent on the feel and the taste of each other. Until Aziraphale breaks them apart with a shaky noise of terrible relief, the side of his face pressed to Crowley's.
"I would have waited forever," Crowley tells him. "You absolute bloody fool."
He'd always thought that if he ever did confess his love to Aziraphale, then it would have been the sort of honest declaration that he deserved. That she'd make some attempt to be poetic, reference their long history and familiarity. He'd never expected it to sound so much like a surly complaint, thrown out to a barely sober angel who thought Crowley could ever get tired of waiting for him. Aziraphale doesn't seem to mind the lack of a bold confession. He fists a hand in Crowley's shirt and tracks him down into his lap, leaving him in a vaguely humiliating sprawl across the angel's solid thighs. They end up pressed forehead to forehead, a small space of their own carved out of the world, which, he supposes, is how it's always gone.
"I asked you to run away with me," Crowley reminds him, "at the end of the world."
That does seem rather telling, I come to realize.
Aziraphale grips him tightly, which feels a little like an apology for being an idiot. Crowley kisses him again because he can, though he doubts the freedom to do so will sink in any time soon. The end.